Hi, Drew.
Hey, John.
Please take your seat.
All right.
Extinguish all smoking material.
I'm not smoking.
Keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast.
What?
I'm John.
And I'm Drew.
And you're listening to The Ourchive.
Our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time. Summer series number three?
Trois.
Yeah.
Trey. Wait, Trey? Yeah.
This is...
Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
This was like one of the first ones we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. We started doing this podcast. We've been waiting to do it.
Yeah, it's like we've been waiting in line for the same ride for 17 months.
Can you do the Electric Street Parade music?
The Main Street Electrical Parade?
The Main Street Electrical Parade. It's like a theremin. Oh man, you're good at that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Been working on it.
Theme parks. Parks that are themed. Amusement parks.
Well, sorta. I mean, that's where it started, right?
What do you mean?
Parks for your amusement.
Yeah. They call them amusement parks sometimes.
Sometimes.
Don't they?
Well, I think there is a distinction. Here's the distinction. A theme park.
Here's the distinction.
A theme park is most likely an amusement park.
Yes.
But an amusement park is not necessarily
a theme park. Good point. Theme parks have a theme.
Yeah.
An overall theme, or a theme park could be a collection of
various
smaller
themes.
Parks with mm-hmm. themes, mm-hmm. individual themes, right?
You can.
What's the history of theme parks and amusement parks?
Well, that depends on who you ask.
I'm asking
you.
So
why don't you ask me?
John, what's the history of amusement parks and theme parks?
I'm glad you asked, Drew. If I were going to answer, this is what I would say. Theme parks came about as a result of amusement parks, which came about as a result of a couple of things.
Okay.
I think most sources trace it back to Europe and European festivals and fairs, medieval fairs, mm-hmm. you know, stuff where people would perform feats. Acts of skill, you know. So there was this whole the whole impetus behind the fairs was entertainment,
okay,
right? Amusement, and profit.
Yeah,
because these performers would come there and they would. This was their livelihood, you know. They would do their thing, and then like the same type of thing, like you'd have at a circus.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways, they were these sort of. people who made their living off of the amusement of others.
Okay.
Right? And eventually...
It's just sick.
It was Europe. Eventually, they started building a permanent space for these, where we're often traveling fairs.
Right.
And so they became a park space. They were, okay. they were typically a big open space where they could have hold these fairs and everything. And then somebody had the great idea... of, well, why don't we just have one that's here permanently all the time? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how the amusement park got started. And it really, I think, took hold here in the United States probably the late 1800s and early 1900s, which is around the time where you start seeing like places like Coney Island.
Right.
Where they're sort of like amusement districts, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a fact that is often misinterpreted.
Okay.
But Coney Island is often pointed to as a single amusement park, but it's actually not.
Oh.
It is a it's a district, and there are various smaller amusement parks that have at various times owned property on Coney Island and operated there. So that's kind of how amusement parks developed. And it was great. It was awesome. They gave us a bunch of rides. They gave us staples of the amusement park experience, like carousels and slides and roller coasters and cotton candy and hot dogs and puking.
Oh,
and
the last one.
That, hey,
it's part of it.
Yeah, if you have a hot dog and you ride the Ferris wheel, you can't loop-de-loop without losing your lunch.
They don't loop-de-loop on a Ferris wheel.
No, but there were loop-de-loop rides.
Yeah, there were.
Yeah. So it was great, and then it wasn't great.
What?
It wasn't, because, well, these things were all sort of fly-by-night operations in a lot of ways. You know, it was kind of unregulated. It was... eventually, I think even the best amusement park operators would run afoul of trouble because it's hard to operate an amusement park. It's hard to make it successful. And the idea behind a theme park, the concept is attributed to a lot of different people, and a lot of different parks are considered. Depending on who you ask, the first theme park could be any number of places because it is sort of a loose definition.
Yeah.
But I consider the very first theme park
to be
Disneyland.
Whoa.
To all who come to this happy place, welcome. Disneyland is your land. Here age relives fond memories of the past, and here youth may savor the challenge and promise of the future. Disneyland is dedicated to the ideals, the dreams, and the hard facts that have created America, with the hope that it will be a source of joy and inspiration to all the world.
Walt Disney, he used to... he was an animator, right?
Yeah.
And he eventually became the owner of an animation studio.
Okay.
And the animation studio started putting out more and more cartoons, animated features, and those required ink, and there wasn't enough ink in America. So he started traveling the world looking for ink. And while he was out traveling the world, he met lots of pirates and ghosts and spacemen. And wolves, and they followed him everywhere he went.
I thought this was going to be real.
He needed a place for them to go. Yeah, he said, well, "You pirates and ghosts keep following me. I'm going to give you a new home." And it's going to be great because it's in California and it's right by the ocean.
What's the real story?
Well, the real story is sort of conjecture at this point because the idea for Disneyland actually percolated for a good 10 or 15 years, actually, maybe even longer. I mean, there's no telling how long Walt had the idea of Disneyland before he actually acted upon it. But going back to like the 40s when he first opened from the profits of Snow White, he built this new studio in Burbank for his animation team and his filmmaking enterprise. And he wanted, as part of that, he wanted to be able to invite the public in or give them some sort of glimpse into the process. But he also would get letters from kids saying, "I want to see Mickey Mouse, where he lives. Where does Mickey Mouse live?" And things like that. And so he had this notion of creating some sort of space that would, one, be part of a studio thing, a promotional piece for a studio, and then also a place where kids could come and meet Mickey Mouse or the Three Little Pigs or the Big Bad Wolf or any of those people.
Okay.
But he didn't build that.
He couldn't.
He couldn't. He was constrained. So... the story goes that he was out with his kids.
All right.
At a park.
Yeah.
Just a regular municipal park that had like a little playground.
An unthemed park.
An unthemed park. He was like...
A park theme park.
He was like, this park is made up of disparate elements that have no cohesion whatsoever.
This park's theme is parks.
So his kids were having fun playing on the merry-go-round, and he was sitting on a bench eating a bag of peanuts, and he's like, surely there's a place, surely somebody could build a place where my kids could go on rides and I could eat more expensive peanuts. That's not what he thought. He had the notion that it would be great if there were an amusement park where families could enjoy rides and attractions together.
Right.
Rather than being segregated.
Okay.
And that is sort of the company line about how the idea for Disneyland came about. But it was actually a series of things that he built up over time. And eventually the idea that he was working on with this whole studio element kind of got pulled to the wayside in favor of a more elaborate environment. And the more movies that he made, the more experience his animators had of creating these fictional environments. And at a certain point, he realized that the one thing that none of the other parks had going for them was that attention to detail, and the environments were always sort of lacking. You know, there were other parks in Southern California, even Knott's Berry Farm predates Disneyland by a few years, maybe 10 years, I think. Anyway, so there were parks that had attempted to create a fictional environment before, but none of them had the talent that Disney had.
Oh,
yeah. That's the thing. So what he set out to do was take the environments of the movies that he was making and then make them real. And he also brought in elements of his own past, places that were sort of parts of American lore and mythology.
Yeah.
So there was small town America, the frontier, the railroad,
right?
And then also the fantasy realms of his movies. And so that's where it got the start. And then he spent a few years trying to pitch the idea to people. And they said, we'll do this for you, but you're going to have to do something for us.
What?
And that was ABC.
Oh. Did ABC, they want a television show?
They wanted a television show.
Well, good on them.
They got one.
Because it was great that he did that, right?
It was pretty smart, actually. A lot of movie makers were sort of thinking that TV was the devil.
Yeah.
And Walt was like, actually, it is the devil, but if I make a deal with the devil, I can make Disneyland.
Well, and he was able to promote it.
Every week.
Promote his cartoons.
Mm-hmm. Promote his movies.
His characters, his movies. And those...
And himself. I think that was another important thing. Walt always introduced... the Disneyland show. He always introduced Disneyland.
Yeah.
So people sort of came to associate him with all of these things.
Here now to tell you about it is Walt Disney.
Welcome. I guess you all know this little fella here. It's an old partnership. Mickey and I started out the first time many, many years ago. We've had a lot of our dreams come true. Now we want you to share with us our latest and greatest dream. That's it, right here. Disneyland, seen from about 2,000 feet in the air and 10 months away. I want to tell you about it because later on in the show, you'll find that Disneyland the place and Disneyland the TV show are all part of the same. Now on a site of 240 acres near the city of Anaheim in Southern California, right about in here, we've begun to build Disneyland the place. We hope that it will be unlike anything else on this earth. A fair, an amusement park, an exhibition, a city from the Arabian Nights, metropolis from the future. In fact, a place of hopes and dreams, facts and fancy, all in one. Now, next year, our television show...
It's it's iconic now.
Yeah.
You know, that show.
Yeah.
What was it called? The Magical...
It was actually, it was in its initial form, it was called Disneyland.
Just the show.
I think, yeah. Because he would go, every episode was themed to one of the lands that would eventually be created in Disneyland. So there would be like a fantasy show, or there would be a frontier show, or there would be a show about the future for Tomorrowland.
Yeah. Here is Tomorrowland. Can you do Walt Disney?
Oh, I don't know.
It's Cronkitean in a way.
It is sort of Cronkitean, yeah.
He sort of speaks through his lips.
Here we are in Tomorrowland. That's
Here's
terrible.
Here's Tomorrowland. That's not bad, right?
Tomorrow.
Here's Tomorrowland. Where you will be able to get on a spaceship and go for a rocket ride around the world. I love those videos.
Yeah.
Or videos. I love that show. What was it called after it was called Disneyland?
Well, then it became a couple of things. It was The Wonderful World of Disney. I think it was Walt Disney Presents at one point.
I thought for sure that the word magic was in there somewhere.
Eventually, it became The Wonderful World of Color.
Yeah.
When he started working on color TV.
Man.
So, yeah, Disneyland... there's a great story that has been told, and I don't know how true it is, but supposedly he got this deal with ABC on like a Friday, and he calls one of the artists, Herb Ryman, at the Disney studio, and he's like, "Okay, I finally got a deal to sell Disneyland."
Is Herb Ryman one of the original? There was one of those animators, those Disney animators.
I think he was actually like a set. Illustrator. I don't think he was one of the animators.
What do they call those?
There's the Nine Old Men?
Yeah, the Nine Old Men.
Yeah, I don't know. He wasn't one of the Nine Old Men.
Okay.
But he worked at the studio, and he told Walt said, "Okay, I finally got my opportunity, but we don't know what Disneyland looks like, so I need you to draw it." And he was like, "Are you crazy? It's Saturday." And Walt said, apparently, "What if I stay here with you? Will you do it then?" And he said, "Oh, okay, sure." So the two of them spent the entire weekend at the studio hashing out ideas.
Wow.
And what emerged was this awesome illustration, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes, of what basically became Disneyland. I mean, it's almost exact.
Nice.
In the layout and the general, the inclusion, the attractions and stuff, or the elements that were included.
Right.
And it worked. They did the show. Within a year, they built Disneyland.
Wow.
Almost exactly incredible. A year. Yeah. They managed to get it built. And it got hyped, you know, week after week.
Yeah.
People were watching on TV and they would see, you know, the progress and oh, look, here's the trees going in. And here's an alligator that will menace you in the Jungle Cruise. And
here's a hippopotamus.
These hippos.
Walt, you said hippopotamus. Sorry. Here is a hippopotamus.
Yeah, I love your Walt is always like, here?
Well, he's always presenting.
Yeah.
That's and good. Over here, a mayor of a city that's being pillaged by pirates.
That's good.
It opened within a year.
Yeah. A lot of build-up, a lot of hype, and it was a huge, huge deal. They televised it live.
Is this a myth? Is it not true, or is it true, that on opening day, like, no one showed up?
That's actually not true.
Because I've heard that. That opening weekend, or opening day, the park barely had any
people. Yeah, I mean, in terms of... the crowds they were expecting, it was a bit of a letdown, which is actually it worked out in their favor because the opening day was disastrous. Like the pavement hadn't dried yet, so women were walking around in their heels. Oh. This is another thing. Like if you go back and watch these videos, you see people are dressed in their finery. You know, they've got awesome. Really nice, you know, pants and fedoras and things on. The women are all in dresses and skirts and stuff. So, yeah, like, people would be walking around. Their shoes would get stuck in the pavement.
Yeah.
The water fountains broke down. The rides broke down. It was hot as hell. And then on top of that, they were airing the broadcast live, which was the first time anything like that had ever been done. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was the very first live television broadcast.
Huh.
Or maybe it was the first live television broadcast that wasn't like news or something that, where they were actually going to multiple locations. Mm-hmm. So they had, you know, three or four camera crews set up, all of them in different places, and they were trying to coordinate, you know, which one was next. So as a result, there were all these, you know, scenes where, like, Art Linkletter is like, he's supposed to be talking about, you know, the spaceman in Tomorrowland, and he's like wandering around looking for like some direction. There were all these mistakes and everything. So yeah, the first day was a disaster.
When Disneyland opened up, nothing worked. Yes, but John, when Pirates of the Caribbean breaks down, the pirates don't eat the tourists.
You do plan on having pirate references in your theme park podcast.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, nothing worked. Big disaster. And everybody said it was Disney's folly. It was going to be his failure.
Disney's folly.
Which is actually something that happened repeatedly. That same thing was said about Snow White when he made a full-length animated movie. They were
Disney's
like,
folly.
That's going to be a complete failure.
Disney fails again.
And he didn't.
Triumph at the Disney camp.
First day, not so good. Second day, much better. Third day, much better. And I think they welcomed their millionth visitor within like 10 days or something.
Nice.
Crazy, crazy.
Nice.
But again, it was like you can't necessarily just say was Disney. I mean, a lot of it was the right time, right place. It was Southern California. The weather was great. The freeway was, you know, just built. People were going to the suburbs. Disneyland was built in a suburb, or it became a suburb. You know, it was Orange Groves at the time, but now you go to Disneyland, it's surrounded by houses. Hmm. So he was where the people were going anyway. He was just there ahead of them. and then the other thing that I think worked in his favor was that he continued to use TV and everything else to feed the park. Yeah. So almost immediately after the park opens, he starts closing and swapping out rides. I don't think it was open when the park opened, but eventually he opened a Sleeping Beauty attraction, and that was right on the cusp of the movie coming out. So he was promoting the movies inside the parks. Mm-hmm. He was promoting the park on the television show, and he was providing fodder for the park via the movies.
Wow.
So it was this symbiotic relationship. Smart dude.
Yeah.
Smart dude.
Is it true that he originally envisioned building it in Missouri?
He
at least investigated the idea.
He investigated the idea of building something in Missouri.
Something.
Yeah. That comes a little bit later. Disneyland was a huge success, and then suddenly all of these other parks start copying it.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, you had a bunch of what was more problematic for Walt personally was the fact that people started trying to cash in specifically on Disneyland by building really cheap, tacky things around it. I think almost as early as like 1958, Disneyland opened in 1955, and the park hadn't even been open 5 years, and already it was sort of attracting this kind of Las Vegas culture around it, feeding off of the tourists. And so he at that point already started looking around for something else. He was he was looking for either ways to acquire new land, or go somewhere else and build something else. And also at that time, he started to expand his goals a little bit and start getting into like urban planning and things like that. And that's ultimately what led him to start looking at other properties. There was a ski resort that Disney was going to build up in the California mountains. He had all these ideas, and none of them really came to fruition. And one of those was a development on the riverfront in St. Louis. He was Walt was born in Missouri.
Yeah.
Or maybe no, he was born in Chicago, but he grew up in Missouri.
Yeah.
Is that right? I don't know. Anyway, he lived in Marceline, Missouri,
okay,
for a certain period of time, and so he would occasionally come back. And he also lived in Kansas City, Missouri, for a mm-hmm. while. That's where he started his animation studio.
Okay.
So he had, yeah, a lot of affiliation with Missouri, and one of the things he wanted to do was potentially build an attraction of some sort in Missouri. And it's people like to claim, especially people in St. Louis, like to say, like, oh man, Disney was going to build Disney World in St. Louis. But it wasn't Disney World at the time.
Right.
He wasn't thinking on quite that scale yet. He was thinking about like an indoor, a couple stories tall, more like a, almost like a Dave and Buster's kind of thing, but on a much bigger scale and with more of a, like an educational element to it. But it did, that fell through. And the legend goes that they were all set to sign the deal and he was ready to go. And then he had a dinner with August Busch, the head of Anheuser-Busch, who at the time was like king of St. Louis.
All right.
The Disneyland has always been a dry attraction. There was no alcohol served in Disneyland, with one exception, and I'll get to that. But August Busch found out that Walt wasn't planning on having any alcohol sold at the this attraction in downtown St. Louis. And he was like, well, there are varying accounts of what he said. But anyway, he insulted Walt, according to the story.
No.
And so Walt was like, nope, not going to do that. Never mind, St. Louis. I'm going to Florida.
Oh,
and that's
August.
Totally not true.
Oh.
Supposedly. I mean, maybe it's true.
That's cool, though, right?
It's a great story. Yeah. It gives me a good reason to not drink AB products.
There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every day. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, and tomorrow's just a dream away. Man has a dream, and that's the start. He follows his dream with mind and heart, and when it becomes a reality, it's a dream come true for you and me. So there's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every day. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away.
Well, it sounds pretty good. In fact, that's just the right spirit. Our songwriter.
I've only been to Disneyland like once, I think. Once or twice. But I've been to Disney World several times.
Many, many, many people have been to Disney World.
Many, many people.
Here. Many people
here, you'll see many people walking through the gates of Disney World. Disneyland, not so many people.
Disney World is the most visited, the single most visited
place in the world.
Location in the world. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. I said that as a joke.
No, it's serious. It's true.
Wow.
In terms of like a single enterprise.
Right.
It is the most visited location on Earth.
It's an incredible place.
It is.
And you mentioned earlier the attention to detail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty stunning how intricate the design of the parks are.
Yeah.
You know, and the... Just the... They carry the themes, whatever they may be, through to nearly every element in the park in some way or another. And it really does feel to me like a whole other place, a whole other world, you know?
Yeah. I think that both their ability to do that and their intent to do that has evolved over time.
Mm.
And I think if you look back at Disneyland when it opened, it wasn't nearly as intricately detailed as it is even now. You know, they've gone back and reworked things at Disneyland over and over again.
Yeah.
But they, whether because of the competition, because they felt they had to step up their game, or just because they had such good talent, over the course of, I think, I put their sort of golden age of Disney theme park development in the 60s, because that is where they first started creating something that, while maybe it's not an exact replica of a place, or, you know, it's not, it may not be quote unquote real, you know, mm-hmm. a real representation of something. That's when they really started to successfully convey a believability, you know, yeah. where like suspension of disbelief became easier,
right.
than disbelief,
right.
You know what? I get this question a lot. I go to Disney World a lot. I go to Disney World as much as I can.
Yeah.
And, or any of the Disney parks, any theme park for that matter. But what particularly keeps me coming back to the Disney parks...
What's the question you get a lot?
Is, why do I keep going back?
Okay.
Like, why do you want to go back there again, you know?
Yeah.
Or what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
How many have you had tonight? the reason... There's probably a lot of reasons, but I think that Disney created... Maybe they didn't create the very first theme park, but I think they created... an experience, an art form, really, that no one else has really matched. So ours, maybe they created it. They defined it, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that started with Disneyland in the 60s, and then definitely continued into Disney World. And Disney World has so much more like space to use.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of arguments about how well they've used it, and I am one of those people that maybe thinks they kind of lost their way in a lot of regards, with particularly with Disney World. But then again, they didn't have Walt. He died before they even started construction on Disney World. So it's a different it was built under a different guidelines, you know, different guidance. It was a company project at that point. And that said, I think what they've accomplished has been remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what they've accomplished.
All right.
Disney World, since that's what I'm most familiar with,
mm-hmm.
is made up of the Magic Kingdom,
mm-hmm.
MGM Studios.
Mm-hmm. Now Disney's Hollywood Studios.
Right, right. It's not mm-hmm. MGM anymore, is it? The Animal Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
They don't call it Epcot. They call it,
No, they call it Epcot.
Do they call it Epcot?
Yeah.
The whole park?
It was originally Epcot Center, and then it just became, Epcot 94, Epcot 95, and then it just became Epcot.
Why were they giving it?
They wanted it to seem more current. This is the thing, and this is like where I'm talking about, where, you know,
genius.
you could make a very strong case that they might have gone astray.
Lost touch.
Yeah.
What does Epcot stand for?
Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow.
Oh.
But it wasn't always supposed to be a theme park.
It wasn't always supposed to be a theme.
Here
we have something that wasn't always supposed to be a theme park.
Yeah, it was going to be an experimental city.
Yeah.
In
a big ball.
In a big dome. It was going to be a place where people lived and...
But that's not what it is.
No, it became a theme park. It's actually kind of full circle, because Walt originally, when he first started testing out the notion of an East Coast Disneyland type mm-hmm. property, he did it at a World's Fair. He did it at the 1964-65 World's Fair in New York.
New York,
Queens, Flushing Meadows.
All right,
and he did four attractions there. And when I say he, of course, I mean the Disney company
all
did
right.
them, but his name was on them. And these all became attractions later.
Okay,
Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln.
Okay,
which eventually went to Disneyland
Hall
and then
Presidents.
Became the Hall of Presidents, or inspired the Hall of Presidents. There was the Carousel of Progress.
Okay.
Which went to Disneyland. Now it's at Disney World. There was the Ford Magic Skyway,
all
which
right.
featured, you sat in a car, a Ford car,
yeah.
and you went through this like futuristic tube, And then eventually you drove past dioramas of like dinosaurs and animals and things like that. And that inspired that pieces of that attraction are still at Disneyland now. They're on the train. And that also inspired later attractions, actual scenes in later attractions. And then the other one was It's a Small World, which is at pretty much every Magic Kingdom style park now.
Right.
Became a staple. So those were huge hits at the World's Fair. And eventually, when the idea of Epcot the city began to get phased out, they started looking at Epcot as more of a World's Fair thing. And that's what it is. It's kind of a permanent World's Fair.
Yeah.
The exhibits change out every now and then, but...
World Showcase.
Yeah. The Walk of Nations.
Here. We have the Walk of Nations. Magic Kingdom has all the classic rides, like the teacups, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Small World. It's a Small World.
Yeah. Right? Haunted Mansion, Pirates.
Haunted Mansion. Oh,
Space Mountain.
On. Hang on now.
Yeah.
The Haunted Mansion.
Are we going to do this? Are we going to go through these?
Well, we're going to at least talk about the Haunted Mansion.
All right.
That is an amazing ride.
It is.
It's just, it's fun to, you know, you're in line, right? And you can see you're coming up to the mansion, basically, right?
Yeah.
The line starts outside.
Yeah.
Of the mansion, and you like walk by some gravestones, don't you? And they have funny little sayings, little
cemetery
rhymes and stuff. Eventually, you find yourself inside the mansion, and you get taken into a room, right? And it's, what do they call it?
The stretch room.
And you watch as they describe. Do they describe like what happened to the people in the paintings?
Here. In this gallery, you'll see paintings of some of our guests in their more corruptible states.
And the whole room stretches.
Yeah, yeah.
And you watch as these paintings grow and reveal the truth behind each of their subjects.
Yeah. Maybe how they came to be residents of the Haunted Mansion.
And then from there you walk into the doom buggies.
Doom buggies,
right?
Yeah.
And you get on these little cool little chairs, basically, and then it takes you through the mansion, and
you're led by your ghost host. You're being escorted by the host of the Haunted Mansion, who's also a ghost.
I read somewhere that there's a theory that over the course of the ride, you die, that you expire over the course of the ride. That initially, as you're riding through, all the ghosts are trying to scare you and, you know, trying to get you out of there. And then there's a transition where there's like, is there a drop or something?
There's no drop.
There's some, I'll have to maybe look this up again, but there's some point where there's a transition and the ghosts all start singing and are nice to you and happy, and at that point you have died.
It's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that theory.
Yeah.
But it works in the flow of the ride because you initially, nothing, you don't see anything.
Necessarily.
You know? You see objects floating, or you'll see the hints of ghosts, but you won't actually physically see any ghosts. And then at the midpoint, the ghosts begin to materialize.
Yeah.
And that's when you start seeing them. You're sort of watching them having this party.
Having this party.
And then it reaches kind of the climax when you leave the house. You move out through the attic.
Yeah.
And you enter a graveyard.
Yeah.
And it's the way that it's staged is... You come up through the attic, and then your car rotates, and you move out of a window.
Backwards, right?
And I have heard that is supposed to simulate the idea that you're actually falling out of the attic, or you're being thrown out by the attic.
That is creepy when you think about it.
I know, isn't it? And it's something that nobody thinks about when they're on the ride. You know, they're you know, so busy watching everything and waiting for a ghost to appear. But yeah, the idea is you're being thrown out of this window.
Yeah,
and then you land on the ground of the cemetery.
Yeah,
and then it's almost like a welcoming
party.
They're
all welcoming you.
Yeah, yeah. And then from there, you actually enter a crypt. Like, you go through a crypt door, and that's when the hitchhiking ghosts
are
there.
Can you sing the song?
When the moon climbs high of the dead oak tree. Something, something, and something, something. Creepy creeps with eerie eyes. Start to scream and harmonize. Grim grinning ghosts come out to socialize. There you go.
The crypt doors creak and the tombstones quake.
Spooks come out for swing and wake.
Happy haunts materialize
and begin to vocalize. Grim grinning ghosts come out to socialize.
Now don't close your eyes and don't try to hide.
Or a silly spook. They sit by your side,
shrouded in a dark disguise.
They pretend to terrorize.
Grim grinning ghosts come out to socialize. As the moon climbs high o'er the dead oak tree,
spooks arrive for the midnight spree.
Creepy creeps with eerie eyes
start to shriek and harmonize. Grim grinning ghosts come out to socialize.
When you hear the knell of a requiem bell,
weird ghost name where spirits dwell,
restless bones etherealize,
wise as spooks of every size.
When the crypt doors creak and the tombstones quake.
I love that ride. It's so good.
It's great. It's probably my favorite Disney ride and possibly my favorite overall theme park attraction ride. Because, and it's weird because it doesn't, like, the tenets of Disney theme park design is that it has to convey a story, but really the story is so loose in the Haunted Mansion that you can interpret it in any way you want to.
And it has the famous, like you said, the famous end where the hitchhiking ghosts sit in your chair. I have learned, however, that that is different now.
It is in Florida at Disney World.
Yeah,
they've changed the...
No longer does it sit... The ghost is not sitting next to you anymore. It's on top of your doom buggy.
Sometimes. Sometimes it's sitting next to you.
Oh.
It's they've added some additional...
It's computer animated, right?
Yeah. Some additional movement to the ghosts.
Too bad. I liked it. It was just sitting there.
I consider it classic to have them just sitting there. Like, that's sort of the classic mode.
Back and forth.
Yeah, yeah. The new way works, I guess.
You almost sounded like one of the ghosts.
The new way. Yeah, but after that, that is probably the memory that most people take away from it is the hitchhiking ghost.
Oh, yeah.
But the scariest part of the Haunted Mansion comes after that, when
with the
creepy doll lady.
Oh, okay. No, I don't remember this.
Yeah, as you're moving back up toward the exit ramp, there's up in the corner of the room, there's
what?
This little doll, and she says,
"Oh,
final arrangements may be made
at the end of the tour
if you decide to join us."
Oh.
Yeah.
Doesn't the ghost host, like, oh, it started at the beginning, right? Like, there's thunder and lightning and you see him hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah.
From a
in the stretch room, yeah. We just totally spoiled the Haunted Mansion for everybody. Not really, because you can't spoil it, but...
I spoiled it.
Way to go, Drew.
It's a good ride.
Here, Drew has spoiled the Haunted Mansion.
All right, from there, we have to go right to Pirates of the Caribbean.
We can do that. Especially we can do it in Disneyland, because they're basically right next to each other.
Yeah. Another awesome ride where...
Classic.
You know, it's funny how simple those two rides are when you think about it, and how at the time there was no movie to theme them around. And so many of the rides these days that get created for Disney are, I can't even, I mean, aren't they all themed most around a movie?
Them, yeah. I mean, there have been a few exceptions.
Or a property.
But
not, very few of them are just original.
Original ideas, yeah. Which is, that was sort of the primary inspiration back in the day, was they would come up with an original concept, and it's kind of flip-flop now where most ideas come from some existing character set or something. But yeah, there are a couple that they've released in the last few years.
But Pirates of the Caribbean, or Caribbean, whatever you want to, however you want to pronounce it, it's another one where it's sort of creepy,
mm-hmm.
especially at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because you're just sort of like floating through, is it like a cave or something?
Yeah. Well, it depends on which version you go on, because the Disneyland version is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But the basic gist is, yeah, you're in this, you're in a boat,
mm-hmm.
and you're traveling through the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And you enter a cave.
Yeah.
And you come across the remains of some pirates.
Yeah. And then
you're warned that dead men tell no tales. Yeah.
Dead men tell no tales.
Ah, but they do.
And then you go down a hill.
Yes. And what that drop is taking you back in time.
That's
now.
Right.
You're going, you're seeing these pirates when
and
they were alive.
Don't you then emerge in this open, this huge open room.
Yeah.
Really feels huge. And there's a fortress, basically a fort or a a stronghold that's under attack.
Under siege.
There's a pirate ship firing at it. And then you go through this stronghold or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
as the pirates invade, and sort of as you progress through, they're more and more taking over the town. That's where you see the mayor being pulled up out of the well, and he spits the water out.
Yes.
You go through the prison.
Don't be cheeking, Carlos!
With the classic.
Don't tell him!
That's his wife.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh. There's the classic scene with the dog holding the keys,
mm-hmm.
and all the pirates trying
the prison.
To get...
The redhead.
The redhead.
The auction.
Being sold
auction.
Off. Now, haven't they edited that in some way?
Not that. That actually, it's
that
funny.
Stayed.
That is still intact, but they did edit...
the woman being chased?
Yeah. In the original version of Pirates of the Caribbean, there was a scene where the pirates were perpetually chasing the women of the village. Like, they were running in circles.
Right.
And... at some point, it was determined that was a little bit not politically correct. This is back in the 90s. So now there are trays of food in the women's hands.
Ah.
And so they're it's as though the pirates are chasing them to eat the food.
And one of them, the woman is chasing a pirate.
Yeah.
To hit him.
It's a classic, classic.
They've, with this one too, they've
Mark Davis. Sorry. It's a classic Mark Davis gag, who also worked on The Haunted Mansion.
Oh.
Yeah.
They've since added characters from the movies.
Mm-hmm. Fairly well. I think that they, all things considered, they managed to bridge that gap pretty well. I think it works better in Florida than it does in California. It works better in Disney World, because Disney World didn't always have the same cohesive story that the original had. So now there is a little bit of closure to it.
Okay.
But yeah, so Captain Jack Sparrow appears throughout the ride. The loose story of pirates seeking gold and then achieving gold and being cursed by gold is sort of usurped in the new version, and it's basically the pirates are looking for Jack Sparrow.
Oh.
And Jack Sparrow is sort of the master of the gold. But of course, if you've seen the movie, you know that the gold is cursed.
I knew that.
Yeah.
I already knew that.
Yeah.
Space Mountain.
Space Mountain.
I have a very vivid memory of Space Mountain from when I was a kid, and it scarred me for a very long time. Not physically, emotionally. But
I was wondering where that scar came from.
I was there with my family, and you know, they all wanted to go on Space Mountain, and at first I was ready to go. I was like, yeah, we're going to Space Mountain. And then I remember seeing a sign that said something about there were lots of twists and turns and, you know, drops and stuff like that. And I got really scared, really scared. I mean, I believe I was crying in the line saying, I don't want to go on the ride. I really don't want
to
do it. And
my
whole family
laughing.
Look at this kid. He's scared as fuck.
Look at this dope. I never want to do a podcast with you.
I'm going to make fun of you until the day I die. So nobody would wait with me off of the ride. So I was forced to go on it, and I basically freaked out the whole time, hated it. And from that moment until like 7th, 8th grade, I would not go on roller coasters.
All because
of
that
experience.
I was
so scared. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and I eventually got over that because of Six Flags. I did some rides in Six Flags and thought, oh, this is great. What am I thinking? And have since gone back on Space Mountain and conquered it. Conquered my fears. It's a dark ride. And you can't see a lot of what's going on. But I closed my eyes while I was on it when I was a little kid. Didn't really need to. Couldn't see anything.
Maybe that was your problem.
You know what I really... what I really like about Space Mountain is that launch.
Uh-huh.
With the crazy lights.
Yeah, that tunnel.
Yeah, I don't think there's a whole lot to say about Space Mountain, but...
No,
but
I mean,
I think that's, you know, that's my connection to it anyway.
I love that there's this sort of a theme that's unspoken in some of these classic rides. Like, so in the Haunted Mansion, you talked about how there's this underlying... the potential underlying theme that you're dying in the course of the ride. Right. And in Space Mountain, at the very end, you basically crash.
Oh, right.
I mean, the official line on it is, I think, that you're in reentry. And
yeah.
So there's like, you know, heat from entering the Earth's atmosphere again. But I've always taken it to be that you're crashing and exploding because it's way more exciting that way.
I think, right? You know, and this is something I think that's somewhat particular to Disney is the theories and the myths and the sort of like stories that are created or that are assumed, you know, it takes a life of its own in a really interesting way. And you can have this strange experience.
Yeah.
You know, that you can build this like narrative around it, you know, whether that was the original intent or not.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to them having that story and layering more of their own story into it. So,
yeah.
And you sort of knowing that if maybe the story that they've created is not as explicit,
yeah.
You know, where it's still left up to your interpretation. I think the fact that you know that, okay, well, there's a story behind this, you actively are working to fill
you're
in those gaps yourself.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how some of these things end up, you know, becoming legend. Like there was a whole story that people grafted onto the Haunted Mansion about this guy named Master Gracie, who was the owner of the mansion originally, and his wife killed him, or he killed his wife, or
his
wives died. Yeah, this is, it's never officially been a story
right.
of the ride, but it's one that people created based
yeah.
on cast members talking with them and stuff. And in fact, there used to be, I think they've removed it since, but in Florida at the Haunted Mansion, there used to be a little a nick in the pavement outside that it looked like a wedding ring, and the story that fed into the storyline. Somebody took that and was like, "Oh yeah, well maybe Master Gracie, you know, threw the wedding ring out, you know, in a fit of despair, and then it got trampled into the ground
yeah.
by the horses because there are horseshoes out there from the like phantom carriage horse or whatever." And it's totally not, it was never
yeah.
meant to be part of the story, but people, you know.
That's just so cool, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. I mean, we could go on for a long time about this. We didn't even talk about like Star Tours.
I know. I was realizing that.
There's a lot, but we'll be back in the next episode, and we'll cover all those other theme parks.
Yep.
But we better get in line if we're going to go on another ride.
Yeah, I'll shove this in the archive.
All right,
you
good.
Get a spot in line.
Okay, I'm going.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.